Garrett Ilsen here, your celeb expert and your celeb savant. Celeb Savant is a weekly entertainment show. We have long-form career retrospective type interviews with celebrities, singers, actors, and industry experts. On this episode of Celeb Savant, I'll be speaking to Dorian Foyle from the band Aliens Don't Ring Doorbells. The band is a trio consisting of Dorian, who plays guitar, sax, backing, and lead vocals, Adam King, who's lead and backing vocals, and Mark Bowden, who's keyboards and backing vocals. Their debut album, Arrival, was recently released. The band are a very special rock band with a unique style of their own. Up next on Celebs Fund, we've got Dorian Foyle from Aliens Don't Ring Doorbells. Where do we find you in the world? What's happening in your life and how are you doing?
Great. Well, wonderful to be here, Barrett, on Celeb Savant, and looking forward to talking to all your listeners and readers. Right now, we are based actually on the Costa Blanca in Spain. And when I say we, I'd say the main team of Aliens Don't Ring Doorbells, which is Adam King and myself. And here we write a lot of the songs. And we also collaborate with our keyboardist, Mark Bowden, who's based in the UK. So we're pretty close to one another. Most of the times we'll cut demos here before we actually go into the studio. You know, I moved to Spain from the Bahamas, actually. I was in the Bahamas for over 15 years, and all my three kids were born there and stuff. So we moved to Spain to be a little closer to my wife's parents here. They're not in Spain. They're actually in Ukraine, but it's still closer. So anyway, we started the project Aliens Don't Ring Doorbells from here on the Costa Blanca. And we're quite happy to be here. It's wonderful. It's wonderful and inspirational kind of a climate here. You know, it's always beautiful. We got the beaches nearby. And so we enjoyed a lot here and look forward to continuing to write music here for a long time.
Lovely. So a double barreled question. Firstly, the name, where does it come from and what does it mean? And let's take it all the way to the very beginning of Aliens Don't Ring Doorbells, to the beginning of your journey and the hybrid version of your musical career.
Sure. The name Aliens Don't Ring Doorbells was given to us by some guy who we ran across on a subway platform. I was there with my 6-year-old son, and this looked to be a homeless guy, was walking on the platform having a conversation with himself, and he stopped, looked at my son, and he said, "It's because aliens don't ring doorbells." And then he repeated, "Aliens don't ring doorbells," as he went down the platform and never to be seen again. So What I think he was trying to say was that, you know, hey, let's stop looking for them. They're here. They've been here a long time. And, you know, they're not going to ring your doorbell, but let's just accept and see what it's all about. And sometimes we refer to this in some of our music and the way we see things, you know, and it just kind of was an interesting set of words. And when I brought it to the band as a potential name, it sort of stuck after a while. First, everybody laughed, of course, but then it stuck. And when I brought the name of the band to the guys, it was, I guess, it was the started in like early 2019 when we initially started to get together. And basically, it was three of us here in Spain. From we were in a cover band together, and Adam King, who's our vocalist, myself, and Christian Pearl, who was a keyboardist on our first album. We thought about writing an album, and I said, yeah, let's try and do it. And I still had my buddies, and we have a family house in the Bahamas still. So what we ended up doing was I was like, well, let's try and write something, because we're basically in a cover band before. We went to the Bahamas and spent 2 weeks there. We would write, you know, we start to work on some songs in the morning. And in the afternoon, my buddies I used to play with in the Bahamas, Kevin, Dean on drums and Earl Forbes on bass, would come over and we would start to jam the songs and try to record as much as possible. But because we were there without any families or anything and living all in that one little condo, you know, it really helped us, you know, write some songs. And we were pretty happy with that first effort that we had another get together, another songwriting session, another 2-week session. And by the time we finished, we had all 12 songs. And then we demoed We went into a studio in the Bahamas called Sanctuary Studios, which, as luck would have it, it's owned by Justin Timberlake and a few other big names, but it's a beautiful studio. And they were kind enough to let us go in there and record our demos in 2 days of 14-hour days. And then we ended up going to Colorado to actually record the album. We decided to produce it as an indie project under our indie record label, No Rules Records. And then we then launched it, and it's started to take hold. And we ended up having two Billboard Adult Contemporary Top 30 hits, I guess you would say. They made the Billboard charts to the songs off the album. One is called It's Your Night, and the other one is called Daylight.
So a couple of
And that
questions.
brings us up to now, you know. So then we toured with Scouting for Girls, we toured with Rochford, and you know, it just started to build up. And you know, we have a pretty good base of fans in Europe, and we're looking forward to touring the United States in 2023.
The difference between doing it yourselves as an independent on an independent label in inverted commas compared to signing to a big record deal. What's the difference for those listeners who are unsure about why some artists would choose one versus the other?
Because the record business has the dynamics of the record business have changed a lot. There's not as much profit in making records now. You know, a lot of it's in live music or different things, but there is still money to be made in music, just not as much. So the record companies are very particular. Typically, to get signed, you already have to be quite well known and, you know, have a tremendous amount of follows and streams. But if you're trying to get it, and you know, some people are fortunate enough to be able to have some luck somehow, some way. The other way is to kind of get some capital together and pay for a recording session like we did, and then try to get that out there and not wait for a record label. So we didn't want to wait for a record label to discover us. We thought we'd put our music out there first. And then, but what can also happen is the upside from that is that you can get your music out there, you can record it, and it's, you know, it's peanuts to put the music out there on Amazon Music, Spotify, et cetera, et cetera. It's just effort, that's all. So if you make the effort, you can do it. But the difference with a record company, record label, a big major label, is distribution. So, you know, our hope later, because, you know, we'd like to get our vinyl out in all the stores, people could find them and stuff. And this takes a major record label. Right now we can do it, but it's like, you know, in small batches, and most of it's digital. So, you know, our hope is that eventually that we'll be able to find a, you know, we've done a lot of the work ourselves. We produced our own music and took a lot of that risk away from a record label. So, you know, fingers crossed we'll find the right partner that will bring distribution to our music so we can get it out to a lot more people around the world, really.
From 0 minutes to a 3 to 4 minute song, your creative process of in creating that. What inspires you guys? What motivates you? What created the music? Tell us that creative journey of 0 minutes to a 3 to 4 minute song.
If you're talking, you know, people write differently. You know, I write songs a certain way, and Adam writes songs in a different way as well. So, for example, I like to write songs that have like a little, I would just like to say they'd have like a little experience that might have happened to me or that I'm aware of, and I'll write about that interesting experience. Adam tends to write music from pictures that he sees in his head. I couldn't describe it any more than that. But I mean, he sees a picture of a song, and the words come out that kind of fit that picture, and he weaves that kind of a thing. And myself, I'm a little bit more write, you know, like trying to write a little bit of a story. Adam largely writes his songs just kind of singing them into his phone. He plays guitar, but he's mainly a, you know, a vocalist, and so he's got melodies all the time. He'll sing the melody, and then he'll bring it to, you know, like a writing session, a jam session that we'll have, and then we'll start to put some meat on it. You know, we'll put some chords, and we'll put, oh, you know, we should have a pre-chorus, or here's the middle eight, and so we'll build the song. And so, but when I bring a song to the band, it has a little bit, you know, there's a, because I know the chord changes and stuff, so I'll put more chord changes structure on it. So it's the combination of me writing in a little bit more structured way, Adam writing in a more sort of picture vision way. And that's how we put it together. That's why all our songs are written jointly with Adam and I, or jointly with Mark Bowden, or previously when we, on the first album with Christian Pearl, we kind of developed the songs in that writing session, although you come with some kind of an idea. And that's how it kind of developed. And the other thing that we like to do is set like a deadline, you know, and say, okay, we're going to go do this. We're going to write this song and we're going to do it during this time. So sometimes that means we might, you know, go away to like a studio. Once we went to a studio in the middle of an orange grove, it's just west of Valencia, about an hour. And it was a real getaway, but it was a lot of fun, and we wrote some great music there. So those things are kind of fun, you know, to do. So that's kind of the process. We probably continue to do it that way.
You mentioned that you previously were in a cover band. So did you guys know that you could write your own songs and write your own music previously being in a cover band? What was that transition like for you?
The honest answer to the question is no, we didn't know if we could write the music. We didn't know. You know, I wanted to try it, and the guys were willing to you know, to come to the Bahamas and try it. So there was a certain amount of pressure we put on ourselves to try and make something happen. It was that kind of internal deadline that we set for ourselves to try and do something. I said, hey, let's try something. The first time we went to the Bahamas for this writing session, and let's see if we can't do something in 10 days. If we get something done, great. If not, you know, we'll have some fun, you know, swimming in the ocean in the Bahamas or something, which we did. But it turned out real good. And you know, when you write something like for the first time, you're like, when you first wrote those songs and started demoing, it was a great sense of, you know, accomplishment. So I guess the bottom line, a short answer to your question is, if you don't try it, you really don't know if you're a songwriter, I think. And some people, and I also think that you can try it and become a better songwriter as you go.
I love that you're saying, if you don't try it, you'll never know. It's like, for me, when I decided to do this podcast, I was like, if I don't do it and try it, I'll never know. So just go ahead and do it. And now I'm loving it. So
that's right. You set yourself a deadline. You said, I'm going to do it. I'm going to have the podcast ready. It's going to go out this Friday, whatever. And you know, here you are with the successful podcast. So congratulations, Barry.
Thank you. Thank you. You mentioned a little while ago, you mentioned Spotify streaming. Now, you mentioned vinyl as well. Now, back in the day, many, many years ago, we had the cassettes, the vinyl, the CDs. I'm not sure if you're aware that all these numbers are increasing. So last year, I was very excited to read that vinyl had the most sales it had since 1990. It had the biggest sales. So those are making a comeback, the whole physical. But we've got these streaming and digital platforms. What are your perceptions of the way people listen and consume music compared to how they previously did?
Many years ago, we used to buy albums. And I was one of them guys buying albums. And, you know, some of them, you could open them and you could read the lyrics. And there might even be, you know, something about the band or what they call liner notes in those days. And you would put the album on and you would, like, you know, go through the album cover, listening to the music and referring to it back and forth, the lyrics. So it was kind of you were able to be in touch with the music. Now, a lot of stuff, people listen to playlists and stuff. They don't really listen to the full artist or the full album. And they'll often skip, just like they flip through, you know, Instagram or what have you.
Yeah.
So the people don't get that as much of a connection. But at some point, you know, you get tired of that and you want that connection. And you have that connection to the music if you buy the vinyl in particular. You know, it is an analog connection to the artist, you know, kind of thing. For our first vinyl, which was produced in the Czech Republic, we did have it pressed on, you know, very high quality, high fidelity vinyl. So it's actually quite a good product these days. And so if you get into it, you buy it, your own turntable and Bluetooth it to your sound bar or whatever, you'll get an excellent result. Plus you'll get, you know, and if not to plug our album, but if you buy our first debut album, Arrival, there is a full booklet in there and poster. And we tried to put all that stuff into the vinyl to have that experience. And people, when they buy the albums on tour, because, you know, it also gives us a lot of room to sign on.
Yes.
It's a real great product. So I'm really glad that vinyl is coming back. The problem right now in the industry is that the production of vinyl is in so much demand that it pushes release schedule. Like our second album is done and we're in the process of, done recording. We're in the process of finalizing and mastering all the songs. Got 12 great new songs coming out. And it looks like it's July for us to be able to get the vinyl out in the market and everything. That's just the reality, but it's great news. The second album, ours is quite unique because, we're doing a vinyl, and a digital release, but very importantly, we're doing a very limited, release sets of 10 sets, and what releasing it is on so in the set comes a vinyl, a CD, a cassette,
yes,
an eight track tape, and a 3.5 inch floppy with all of them. So 5 albums you get
on
5 different digital formats. Now people ask, how do you get an 8-track tape to really work? We bought a vintage 8-track tape recorder and we're actually getting it made. And very few artists have ever released an album on 3.5 inch floppy. The last artist that did it was Brian Eno, as I recall. I can't remember the name of the album. But so, it's kind of unique. And it will be, like I said, to put in touch with the artists. And this is actual 5 different formats, 6 if you count digital. So that will be available on a limited basis. So it's just something kind of quirky that we are, it's like a tip of the hat to this reemergence of demand for, physical music.
Well, you can sign me up for the CD because I love myself a CD. I love the booklets. Every month I've got my little budget for CDs and I order them from Amazon. So I'm definitely there for that. So yes,
you
I'm
got really, it, Barrett.
Lovely. I look forward to that. You mentioned earlier that you opened up for Roachford and Scouting for Girls. Tell us more about that experience of performing as an opening artist and those tours. How did those go?
Well, the first one that we did was with Scouting for Girls, and that was in the fall of 2021. And if you recall, it was very sort of an iffy time with the COVID. Yeah. There were still lots of restrictions, et cetera, et cetera. But it was already, in the UK, people were up to, pretty much had enough with all the restrictions. Yes. So the restrictions were less. I think your previous government, kind of reduced restrictions a little bit to increase the herd immunity, which actually worked out for the UK, I think. And so it was in the fall of 2021. And we played all the way from like Swansea out in Wales, right?
Yeah.
At Swansea out there. We went all the way up to Scotland, to Aberdeen and Edinburgh and all through the UK, Cheltenham and Southampton and all around. And I think we did about 30, 40 shows with Scouting for Girls. And those guys love to play live. And they're a great live band. I mean, it was a big challenge for us because they are very, very good live. And that's why they tour all the time. People love to see them. That was a real pleasure to play with those guys. And we'd like to think we held our own as best we can. We certainly got a lot of people buying our T-shirts and stuff at those concerts. So that's how that went. And then we had an opportunity to tour Europe, parts of Europe, Austria, Switzerland, and Germany with Andrew Roachford band. And, he's a wonderful, decorated British singer and songwriter and been around for a long time. And that was a great tour, very professional. He's got a great, great band. You can tell good lead singers or good front people are really best with great musicians and Andrew Roachford. Of course, he plays with great people. He's also the keyboardist and singer in Mike and the Mechanics. So, he's
didn't know that.
Yeah, that's the guy. Okay. Yeah, and I think he's been on their latest, their last hit, whatever it was, and he tours with them now. So that was a great experience. And now in 2023, there's lots of opportunities for us, and we're talking to, quite a few managements of bands to see if there's an opportunity for, we've got a new album coming out,
yes,
of which already released 3 three singles into the market. And so we've got a lot to bring to the table for a band I'd like to that needs a great support act. We're trying to get enough fan base, because once we get
Yes.
to a large enough fan base, we'll be able to headline, and that's
Yes.
our goal, of course, Barrett.
I was just about to say, so let's put it out to the universe that next step is Aliens Don't Ring Doorbells will need a supporting act because they'll be headlining.
That's great. Yeah, we're happy to help somebody, because people are helping us,
Yes.
so we like that too.
So I'm going to put you on the spot. I love playing this game. My recipients don't always like this game. So I know if I had to ask you this question in 2 minutes, 2 hours, 20 minutes, 2 days, I know your answer will be different each time. But if you had to give me your go-to five songs by other artists in this moment, what would those five songs be?
I would say five artists. I would say maybe I'd probably start with maybe a Jukebox, The Ghost, Everyone's Lonely. Maybe artists I've loved forever, Peter Gabriel, Sledgehammer. I would say probably something that I've always loved, like from the Beatles, like for example, Martha, My Dear. I've always loved how that song is was written. So how many songs have I got now?
You've got two left, two left.
Two left.
Yes.
Well, I'm a guitar player, so one of the greatest the guitar players that's ever lived just passed away, great British guitar player Jeff Beck. So I'd have to
Yes.
say, 'Cause We've Ended as Lovers would be one of my favorite songs. I've played it live myself, and I've always loved playing that song. Probably the last one would be probably the band Free, because that was the first song I learned on guitar, was the All Right Now song. And I love that band, and so many of us met our girlfriends listening to that song. It was a great song.
Your perceptions, or have you been to South Africa at all?
Never had the pleasure so far. It's on my bucket list.
Okay, cool. So when you're headlining your tour and you're performing here, I'll be cheering right up in front. And
Yeah.
thereafter, we'll go for coffee, we'll go for safari, and I'll be your tour guide when you come to South Africa. How does that sound?
That sounds terrific. We would love to. I've always heard it's a paradise there. And, I'd like to see some of that myself, to be honest.
So you mentioned about the touring, and I'm the person who's right up in front. I like screaming, I like it, do my thing. But I find the people around me all have their cell phones out and are trying to get the perfect picture, the perfect video, the perfect whatever they're trying to get. On the receiving end of that, when you're just seeing a bunch of cell phones instead of faces in front of you, what is that like for you as an artist?
We kind of look, I myself just speaking, I'll just tell you honest, I kind of look between the phones and try to find some eye contact with
Yes.
somebody, because if somebody's holding the phone, there's no eye contact. Quickly don't see that, and you do see the individuals who are you kind of your eye just kind of goes to that. So I kind of don't see it, but it's sometimes, for example, when we play a song off our debut album, it's called Story. It's a pretty song, and people really often get into it and sing the chorus with us. But what we often find is that we encourage the people to light up their the torches on their phones,
Yes.
and we get this wave of beautiful light that comes out sometimes. So when they use the phones that way, it's not bad. When they're pointing it at you, filming it, you
Yeah.
don't really see who the person is behind, and that's and they don't see who I am either.
Yeah.
So they miss that one moment that I would have had eye contact with them. Because with our crowds, that's right, I like to do that.
Dorian, the podcast is listened to throughout the world. The main listening
Terrific.
audience is the UK, the USA, Australia, and then South Africa. As a final message to the listening audience, what would you like to say?
I would say come out and support some live music any way you can, and also we've had, I don't know, more than a decade of music m being made with a box, a computer. Let's listen to some music made with instruments, and that's one of the things we offer, is that we record everything on real instruments, and we doing it for our second album, and we do it at a real recording studio. So you might say that's vintage or what have you, but we think it makes a difference. And I do think the audience is you know, the mind is an unbelievable power, and it could sense little tiny things, differences between real instruments and not, you know, and it's nice to challenge the ear to enjoy that. And we hope that more and more people do it. And as we talked about today, Barrett, people are starting to get into more, you know, LPs and physical CDs and what have you. And I think that this trend is going to really take off, and I hope it take off and we'll be a part of it, you know, in 2023, that people will come out and support live music, people playing music with real instruments, like what we're doing.
Yeah. So as Dorian says, go out there, support live music, and just put your cell phones away and have fun.
That's right. Exactly. Get out and do it, man.
Get out and do it.